Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington.
And I'm Anna Mateo. Each day, we bring you a program that helps you learn American English. We speak at a slower speed and use words that are easy to understand.
Today's program is all about something many of us often do not think about: our posture. Researchers have found our posture has surprising effects on our brains. Anna starts us off.
We have known for a long time that our body posture, the way we hold our bodies when we sit, stand, or walk, tells the world a lot about us.
People who walk with their heads bent down can appear unsure or not confident about themselves, while people who walk with their shoulders back and head held high appear confident.
But can our body posture affect the way we see ourselves? A social psychologist named Amy Cuddy believes it can, and she wants to share this information with the world. Ms. Cuddy speaks all over the world sharing the power of the 2-minute power pose. She says her goal is to empower the powerless.
Before facing your next stressful situation or a difficult challenge, Ms. Cuddy wants you to take 2 minutes to power pose. Spread your arms wide above your head as if you are winning a race.
Or stand like the superhero Wonder Woman, with hands on hips and feet shoulder-width apart. Hold these poses for at least 2 minutes. According to research by Ms. Cuddy and her colleagues, your brain chemistry will change, giving you more confidence.
You are listening to VOA Learning English.
Next, we tell you about research Professor Cuddy carried out into the physical effects of posture and posing. Posture has been linked to hormones that affect how we feel and behave. Here is more about Amy Cuddy and her work.
Amy Cuddy is a professor at Harvard Business School. Back in 2010, she became interested in male and female body language from watching students in one of her classes. She said, for the most part, the men held power poses, taking up a lot of physical room in the class. They seemed confident and asked many questions. The female students, for the most part, did the exact opposite. They made themselves as small as possible and did not speak up as much in class.
Ms. Cuddy started to wonder what our individual body language says to our individual selves. So she set up an experiment with Dana Carney, then a social psychologist at Columbia University.
They asked 42 men and women to randomly hold high or low power poses. The researchers did not tell any of the participants in the experiment what they were testing. People in the high power pose group held poses such as putting their feet on a desk with their hands behind their heads.
People in the low power group held poses such as sitting in a chair with arms held close to the body, with hands folded, or standing with arms and legs crossed tightly. Both groups held the poses for 2 minutes. Then Ms. Cuddy and Ms. Carney tested hormone levels of the study subjects. The brain chemistry of both groups had changed.
The researchers found that 2 minutes of high-power posing lowered the stress hormone cortisol and increased levels of testosterone. Also, all the subjects in the high-power pose group said they felt powerful and in control after the pose. They also took more risks during the experiment. Lower-power posing did the opposite. It raised cortisol levels and lowered testosterone levels. These low-power posers also took fewer risks during the course of the experiment.
How do these chemicals affect the brain? Too much cortisol interferes with learning and memory. High cortisol levels also increase the risk of depression and mental health problems. Testosterone, on the other hand, is the hormone linked to assertiveness and confidence.
Ms. Cuddy and her colleagues found that body language and posture can temporarily change the chemistry of our brains.
She has said that this research can have real life-changing effects on people who feel powerless.
She adds that anyone needing higher confidence levels, from athletes and performers to people heading into a job interview, could benefit from power posing. At age 19, while in college, getting her undergraduate degree, Ms. Cuddy was in a serious car accident. The accident left her with a severe brain injury.
Doctors advised her to give up her dreams of getting an advanced degree and take another path in life. She says she was always known as an intelligent girl and good student. The news was difficult to hear.
Finally, Miss Cuddy decided to stay in college. She worked hard, and even though it took her 4 years longer than everyone else, she finally got her degree. She wanted to get her master's degree at Princeton University and found an advisor who believed in her.
But Ms. Cuddy lost her nerve. She told her advisor she wanted to quit. Her advisor ordered her to go to class and to just fake it. Fake it till you make it is the expression her advisor used.
Ms. Cuddy continued faking it, getting more and more confident. She faked it all the way to Harvard Business School, where she is now a professor. Then, Ms. Cuddy simply forgot to fake it.
She forgot until one day when a female student came into her office and said she wanted to quit. This student said she felt as if she didn't belong. Ms. Cuddy told the girl, "You do belong," and gave the student the fake it till you make it speech that Ms. Cuddy's advisor gave her all those years ago.
It was at that moment Amy Cuddy realized that finally she had made it. She had become the person she wanted to be.
Amy Cuddy urges people to share the information on power posing with anyone who may need to feel more powerful. It is simple, free, and might be life-changing. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Mario Ritter. Join us again tomorrow for another As It Is program from The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, at VOA Learning English.
Now, the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories. Some unusual words describe how a person spends his or her time. For example, someone who likes to spend a lot of time sitting or lying down while watching television is sometimes called a couch potato. A couch is a piece of furniture that people sit on while watching television. Robert Armstrong, an artist from California, developed the term couch potato in 1976. Several years later, he listed the term as a trademark with the United States government. Mr. Armstrong also helped write a funny book about life as a full-time television watcher. It is called The Official Couch Potato Handbook. Couch potatoes enjoy watching television just as mouse potatoes enjoy working on computers. A computer mouse is the device that moves the pointer or cursor on a computer screen. The description of mouse potato became popular in 1993. American writer Alice Kahn is said to have invented the term to describe young people who spend a lot of time using computers. Too much time inside the house using a computer or watching television can cause someone to get cabin fever. A cabin is a simple house usually built far away from the city. People go to a cabin to relax and enjoy quiet time. Cabin fever is not really a disease. However, people can experience boredom and restlessness if they spend too much time inside their homes. This is especially true during the winter, when it is too cold or snowy to do things outside. Often children get cabin fever if they cannot go outside to play. So do their parents. This happens when there is so much snow that schools and even offices and stores are closed. Some people enjoy spending a lot of time in their homes to make them nice places to live. This is called nesting or cocooning. Birds build nests out of sticks to hold their eggs and baby birds. Some insects build cocoons around themselves for protection while they grow and change. Nests and cocoons provide security for wildlife, so people like the idea of nests and cocoons too. The terms cocooning and nesting became popular more than 20 years ago. They describe people buying their first homes and filling them with many things. These people then had children. Now these children are grown and have left the nest. They are in college, or they are married and starting families of their own far away. Now these parents are living alone without children in their empty nest. They have become empty nesters. This VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories, was written by Jill Moss. I'm Faith Lapidus.
I'm Doug Johnson.
And I'm Barbara Klein with People in America in VOA Special English. Today, we tell about Barbara McClintock. She was one of the most important scientists of the 20th century. She made important discoveries about genes and chromosomes.
Barbara McClintock was born in 1902 in Hartford, Connecticut. Barbara was the third of four children. Her family moved to the Brooklyn area of New York City in 1908. Barbara was an active child with interests in sports and music. She also developed an interest in science. She studied science at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. Barbara was among a small number of undergraduate students to receive training in genetics in 1921. Years later, she noted that few college students wanted to study genetics.
In the early 1920s, genetics had not received widespread acceptance as a subject. Only 20 years had passed since scientists rediscovered the theories of heredity. Gregor Mendel proposed these ideas after completing a series of experiments with plants. His experiments helped scientists better understand how genes operate. They showed how genetic qualities are passed to living things from their ancestors.
Barbara McClintock decided to study botany, the scientific study of plants, at Cornell University. She completed her undergraduate studies in 1923. McClintock decided to continue her education at Cornell. She completed a master's degree in 1925. 2 years later, she finished all her requirements for a doctorate degree. In the late 1920s, McClintock joined several other students in a group that studied genetics. The students included a future winner of the Nobel Prize, George Beadle. Another was Marcus Rhodes. Years later, he would become a leading expert in genetics. McClintock said both men recognized the importance of exploring the connection between genes and chromosomes. McClintock stayed at Cornell after she completed her education. She taught students botany. She also supervised genetic studies of the corn plant, or maize. She studied chromosomes, which are lines of genes. She made several discoveries about genes and chromosomes.
The 1930s were not a good time to be a young scientist in the United States. The country was in the middle of the Great Economic Depression. Millions of Americans were unemployed. Male scientists were offered jobs, but female geneticists were not much in demand. McClintock received two offers to travel and carry out research projects. The first came from America's National Research Council. She worked at several places, including Cornell and the University of Missouri in Columbia. Later, a group called the Guggenheim Foundation provided financial aid for her to study in Germany. McClintock went to Berlin, but returned to Cornell the following year. Her skills and work were widely praised, but she was still unable to find a permanent job.
For years, scientists had been using X-rays to study genetic material in plants and other organisms. They found that X-rays caused genes to change. Sometimes the X-rays physically broke the chromosome. Genetic researchers looked for changes in the organism. Then they used this information to produce a map linking the changes to a single area of the chromosome. McClintock became interested in the way genes reacted to unusual events. She formed a successful working relationship with Lewis Stadler of the University of Missouri. He had demonstrated the effects of X-rays on corn. Stadler sent maize treated with radiation to McClintock. She identified unusual areas she called ring chromosomes. She believed they were chromosomes broken by radiation. The broken ends sometimes joined together and formed a circle or ring. This led her to believe that a structure at the end of the chromosome prevents chromosomes from changing. She called this structure the telomere.
Stadler got the University of Missouri to offer a permanent position to McClintock in 1936. She became an assistant professor. During her time at the university, she worked with plants treated with X-rays. She also discovered plants with chromosomes that broke without help of radiation. She described this activity as the breakage-fusion bridge cycle. University officials and professors recognized the importance of McClintock's research. Yet she believed that she was not able to make progress in her position. So she decided to leave the University of Missouri.
An old friend from Cornell, Marcus Rhodes, invited McClintock to spend the summer of 1941 working at the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory. It is a research center on Long Island, near New York City. McClintock started in a temporary job with the genetics department. A short time later, she accepted a permanent position with the laboratory. This gave her the freedom to continue her research without having to teach or repeatedly ask for financial aid. At Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory, McClintock continued her work with the breakage-fusion bridge cycle. She found that some corn plant genes acted in an unusual way. They appeared to move from cell to cell during development of corn particles, or kernels. She discovered that the genes moved on and between chromosomes.
McClintock confirmed her discovery and extended her observations for 6 years. The changes could not be explained by any known theory, so she developed her own theory. She believed the movable genes were not genes at all, but genetic controllers or controlling elements. She said they influenced the actions of other genes. During this period, McClintock was elected to the National Academy of Sciences. She was the third woman ever so honored. She also was named president of the Genetics Society of America.
In 1951, McClintock was asked to present her findings at a conference held at Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory. Her report described the movement of genes from one part of a chromosome to another. She used the presentation to discuss her ideas of controlling elements in genes. The other scientist reacted to her ideas with a mixture of criticism and silence. Most scientists believed that genes did not move. Few people seemed to accept her findings. Yet others argued that her experiments were complex and difficult to explain, even to other scientists. They said she would not have been invited to speak unless conference organizers understood some of the importance of her work.
For years, many scientists dismissed McClintock's findings. During this period, she continued doing her own work and reaching her own findings. Beginning in the late 1950s, she went to Central and South America to study different kinds of maize plants. She examined the development of agricultural maize by native peoples. She also assisted younger scientists and students in genetics. Her work at the Cold Spring Harbor Laboratory was recognized in 1970. She was given the American government's highest science award, the National Medal of Science.
By the 1970s, newly developed methods of molecular biology confirmed what McClintock had learned through observation. Her discoveries have had an effect on everything from genetic engineering to cancer research. McClintock won the Nobel Prize for Physiology or Medicine in 1983 for her discovery of the ability of genes to change positions on chromosomes. She was the first American woman to win an unshared Nobel Prize. Barbara McClintock remained at Cold Spring Harbor for the rest of her life. She died in 1992. She was 90 years old.
This program was written by George Grow. Lawan Davis was our producer. I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Doug Johnson. Join us again next week for People in America in VOA Special English.